Start of interview with M.D. Banda on the 7th of January, 1968. I repeat, interview with M.D. Banda on the 7th of January, 1968.
Interested in a variety of problems in this field. For instance, the Land Development Ordinance of 1935. I was wondering how you would analyze its main aim.
It's a long story, but I will try to be very brief. The economy of Ceylon, prior to the British, and prior to even, I suppose, the rest of the Portuguese rise, was one of cultivation of food in the form of paddy, and cultivation of full grain in the form of kurakana, where you call it full grain, and we call it the paddy land or mud cultivation. Mud of either air or highland cultivation. But both forms of cultivation, whether it is a paddy field or whether it is a highland crop, or food. That's the main thing. After Sri Vasilan only, in that state of the economy, probably all the country did that. And so they get cattle and keeping an animal was also. Yeah. Then came the Dutch and the Portuguese. They came for cinnamon. Something that was growing almost wild here, then became a commercial product. So commercial era in the world had set in. And they have been going in search of various things to the east and all over the world, these countries, common knowledge. So the spies of this, they came to Ceylon also, they touched a stone, sash, elephant tusk, all that followed. But those were not farmed in a certain sense, just gathered. Now, with the advent of the British, and prior to that also, since we were trying with the Dutch, the cinnamon cultivation took place, and the British came. And then we started the coffee era, followed with the tea. The whole agricultural economy turned away from food production, producing food for the people, which was their main occupation, and they had food, and some sort of clothing and things like that, they were quite satisfied at that time. So, on the economic side, we started the coffee boom. Then, the coffee disease, experimentation in tea, and tea succeeded, yeah, coffee failed. Then came rubber, and then coconut also in the form of estates began to spread. So the economy got converted into tea, rubber, and coconut. According to the landholding, the copy relations as between the feudal lord of the king and the subjects, and or the feudal lord and the subjects, or his tenants, you see, or the communal rights of the people themselves, in that form of landholding, while one possessed the paddy field as property, the highland was not possessed as such, individual holding. Customarily, certain area of the Gangoda, where there was jungle land, was farmed by that very village. It's for its food again, you see. And then you don't have this form of intensive cultivation of fertilizer and all sorts of modern developments of keeping proper tillage and proper fertility and so on, and the institution of private rights of property was not so hard and fast as now, particularly in the highland. Plenty of land available compared to the population. The ratio of land to population was very much in the favor of the people, you see, there's so much land. That people place a lot of emphasis on paddy cultivation as being the main occupation, is ruled by the fact that all the resources of the king or the country at that stage went into the system, suffering of this tank system.
Yes.
The civilization, the pedicilization, the main thing. On that, of course, you get the higher clubs coming. So, I'm very, I'm not being analytical or anything, I'm being very broad sweep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the coffee and the tea are coming in, land has to be available now. There's jungle land, fishing to be found. There is other land, marginal land, where people have sometimes cultivated land. Now, to be fallow, that's the form of recuperation of the soil, you see. Now, to go back to jungle, and you have what they call it, Sena cycle, maybe 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, 40 years, or 15, 10 years, even depending upon the pressure of the population in that particular region. With the passing of what you always hear is wasteland ordinance.
Yes, that I know.
Yes. So wasteland ordinance came into operation, they decided that the presumption was in favor of the crown. And many stretches of land, where people actually have had some cultivation, they were unable to, they didn't know in the first place what the difference is. The law is passed, everybody is not always perceived to know the law, they don't know what it is, even now it is so. How else do you know what the law is, isn't it? So, at that time, it is a completely different property relationship between the state and the people. So many, even if they had claims, were not able to prove or didn't know what the difference would do with it. Others who had proved their claims even, were not able to establish that there has been cultivation continuous for 30 years or something like that. You know? Because those were not fertile crops that they were cultivating.
Mm-hmm.
Here and there, there's a jack tree or something that has sprouted out. They say, well, this is our jack tree. They may have been able to establish cultivation in that form. So they are taking use of the land in that form. But by and large, it was for dry grains,
mm-hmm.
highland cultivation, you see, the grain crops, other than paddy. So, the forest, there was enough of forest, on top of that came this other thing, a large chunk of land became crown. And that crown land was, you know how it was farmed out also, no?
Yes. On individual basis, auction.
Auction, on individual basis. Now, then, public servants, engineers, the various people, government agents, or anybody, military personnel, were all became estate owners. They had the resources, they had the connections with the world trade, so to speak, developing trade of the British. And this began to develop very fast. And of course, indentured labor came, all that sort of thing is something that followed. Now, what happened was, with this land, sales and things like that going on, the economy moving in that direction, production of development of land and production of food began to go, they get thoroughly neglected. So in the north of the province, and they are in the tank country, particularly in the north 25, northeastern province, and Polnaru areas, that's not 25. And if you look at the eastern province, all those areas which are surplus areas, the whole tax system itself began to crumble up. And they say, as a result of that also, malaria came in, and as a result of malaria, this happened. All that happened now. That's all that meant, the weakening of the peasantry as an economic sector, and with no attention paid for their welfare, or no conscious effort being made for the production of food. While that was the main consideration in the long years, that was the tradition. That tradition just got broken up. And people began to rush in, you see. Not only the big capitalist people, it was a lot of resources, foreign companies and various people came in, and the banking system came up that way, the commerce came up that way. So that was the sector into which anybody with any enterprise, resources, knowledge, wanted to better himself, gradually began to move. So you say local sectors also developing, but you got the people of the country who had some resources, moving in those directions, and people, when of course plum bago mining came, people who obtained money from plum bago also went in for the estate.
Mm-hmm.
Even now people go for the estate, no? That's the tradition, land. So, in this trend, there were a few people who are British governors and various people like that, public servants, and also the local people who were taking a greater interest, began to take a greater interest on the peasantry and the food at that stage also. And as a result of the agitation and the initial problem, they appointed what is called a land commission. Land commission, 27 or something. Land commission. And that's very interesting reading if you read that.
Yes, I got a report.
Yeah, very good. Very good reading. So people like Mr. B.S. Selanayaka, from a rural background, affluent in that sense, mine owners also, estate, going in for the state, development of the state themselves, also moving along with the peasantry, because they were from the rural city, they were constantly moving about the peasantry, were pioneers even in the land commission, I think, agitated for the land commission. Then the land commission reports were out. At that stage, the political development took place in this country. Dodoma constitution came in. So, when the Dodoma constitution came in, there was a, what we call a partial self-government or not, self-government or something like that, no?
Yes.
With certain restrictions, there is much of the power of arranging the internal development of the country, both on the development and social and educational side, and so on and so forth, came more into the hands of the local representatives of the people.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, universal franchise was the basis on which elections were held. So public pressure, public needs found expression through these representatives in the political organization of the country. And a big swing took place, a swing away from this estate development, plantation development, mercantilism, away from that, while it is going on to focusing attention on the majority of the people of the country and the economy that kept the country going. You see, although food was cheap, food was cheap, all this stuff that we are now importing at very high prices, so, very cost very little. Measure of rice was 9 cents or something like that. It means Chinese rice from Burma, chili, everything was very cheap because cost of production there was also cheap. And our people were not able to compete with them in the market also. So, I mean, it was just a subsistence economy. Fellows tried to go more for work in estates and doing their own cultivations and so on and so forth. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, based on the recommendations, I think of the Land Commission report, to read that, I know, I can't read for the wages, but you know, the Land Development Ordinance came into being.
It's a form of tenure.
Yes. Special form of tenure, as well as laying emphasis on the development. That's why it's called the Land Development Ordinance. Now, they found that the impoverishment of the peasantry took toll in many ways. One was that they also began to sell their land.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever land to which, after the peasant ordinance, they had land also now. Developed villages had land, for instance, study land also, high land and all that. Now, with this rush for people to go and buy land for development of estates, the peasantry also began to sell their land. Now, they had no credit facilities, they had no way to withstand any pressure on them for their needs and so on and so forth. So, with the result that there was impoverishment as a result also of the peasantry themselves, apart from the Western Audience operation, selling their own land.
To whom? To
Sudanese
and Europeans?
Yes, to Sudanese and Europeans both. Chetis? Chetis came in much later.
No?
Hmm?
Moorish traders?
They were moved with another trade, I think. They were not big landowners. Subsequently, of course, they also moved in. But at that stage, more for the village, you see what happened was, if there's a rich man in the round about in the village, maybe a big trader, maybe a big influence, and you get many of these doctors and notaries and people like that who were in various districts, the money was in their hands. So any sector who were in this area, developed keen on the estates, began to buy up village land. You see? And those got consolidated into estates.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this collectivization in different sense, you see? So, now to arrest that, that's one idea.
Yes.
You see?
One name
was to prevent the alienation of land. Now, so the Land Development Ordinance brought in these concepts, that land thereafter was generally not put on auction.
That's right.
Up to that time, one of the big sources of revenue for the government was land sales, what we call land sales. That will be a regular feature. That means land in various districts were auctioned. And that was a revenue, form of revenue, land sales. Income tax also came in during that time. As a result of that, there was another source of revenue for the government. And with the promulgation of the Land Development Ordinance, one could say practically that nobody could obtain land whatever the price he paid. It didn't depend upon the price. And the land was held because it was allegedly held in trust for the
people. And then it was distributed through land trust.
Yes. Then the machinery of land companies came in and it was distributed to land companies, and then in the selection of persons to receive land, people with land received no land. That was a disentitlement.
Mm-hmm.
So the peasantry and large families and the good background of peasant cultivation and so on and so forth were the entitlements for land. The whole thing was completely reversed. Man with resources, man with huge incomes, and almost shut off. You see?
At the same time, wasn't there some idea of increasing food production by these beings? Because it gave them a certain amount of security.
Yes, yes, yes. So, that concept took place. Now, when you gave the land to the peasantry, in that way, the class to whom the land was given thereafter was the peasantry.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's correct, huh? Then, idea of development was there. Idea of non-alienation was there. Once they get it to their hands, they were not able to sell it to somebody else.
Without permission?
Without permission means actually we can't sell. This land development ordinance land is said to be land held in lease in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lease in perpetuity. You see, it's not outright ownership. And they have to pay what they call an annual payment, every year a small payment. You can't subdivide the land without permission from the government. There is in that permit, land development ordinance permit, a unit called a unit of subdivision. Beyond that you can't split it up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, all
right. The line of succession is there.
Mm-hmm.
You see? You can't alienate. You can't mortgage. So it prevented alienation. It prevented subdivision. It sought development. So
that's very interesting. I was just wondering whether these purposes went against each other, the social justice and development, couldn't be combined.
At that stage there was no trouble. But now it has come. You see? Because these sought to correct certain features of the present thinking that were very, very much on the day, namely, if whatever land they had on their own, they used to sell and become landless.
Yes.
So if the government also gave some chunk of land, what is there to prevent them doing the same thing?
Yes.
You see, what they had also they sold now.
Yes.
So they may do the same thing. Therefore, you have got to prevent this land being sold. You have also ensure that the land is made productive. Two things.
Yes.
You have also to prevent that other thing, you see, that is, according to the inheritance laws,
it gets subdivided.
Subdivided.
And therefore, that undermines production.
Fragmentation.
Mm.
Fragmentation of the land, and fragmentation leads to uneconomic holding, that leads to non-development.
Mm.
Nobody develops the land because they are common ownership. You see, that leads to a lot of crime, bickering, all the sort of things.
Mm.
So this sought to prevent that. It's a new venture now. This sought to prevent fragmentation, sought to prevent alienation. Now when you say prevent alienation, that means nobody would, you can't mortgage this.
Yes, I see that.
You see?
No, but I was wondering about the aims clashing. I was wondering whether the fact that you gave it to a peasant, a landless peasant, and might mean that in fact you are giving it to people who didn't have the enterprise and the capital to develop the land.
That's how, then of course, Then came a series of other actions which made it possible for the peasantry to get something out of the deal of the land. That is, they didn't have resources, because you are giving land to a person who has no resources now, of his own. So a series of assistance to colonies came in. The Land Commission has departed. If you examine that, you will find assistance to colonies, every boat. Now colonies got assistance, much of the work that normally would have to be done by a person with resources were done by the state itself. Land Commission Department to begin with, then they found the Land Commission Department by itself contactless. Therefore they started off, they organized another department called the Land Development Department. So the land development aspects of the development ordinance, good portion of it, the basic development work, were taken up over by the government there for the peasantry. So burden removed. So thereafter, in the colonization area, the peasantry began to give land which was semi-developed, one can say. The basic irrigation works have been done. The main field channels have been done. A house was constructed. And assistance to colonies, in form of further assistance to colonies, they were given buffaloes, they were given seed paddy, they were given 6 months subsistence. So after 6 months, they get a crop. See, all sorts of assistance came in. Right? Then, and it was going on. An enterprising fellow was quite all right. One enterprising fellow still lagged behind.
Yes, that's the point. I was wondering whether the basis of choosing colonists and allottees on the principle of those with the greatest number of children and such social justice principles, landless people, for instance, meant that you may not be getting an enterprise.
That is true. At that stage, as I said, some were enterprising enough and they have made good. Some were lagging behind. So the basis of selection was these lands were meant to be cultivated by the peasants themselves, not to hire labor and all that. They deserve that, and the man who was most in need was a man with a large family and from a rural background. If his normal activity in the village was agriculture. So he was given. Because he had so many hands also to help him. Those are ideas. And he needed the biggest help from the government also. I think those two ideas came together. But as among any people, there are enterprising people and there are fellows who are not enterprising. When people were selected for the colonies in the earlier days, the first election was such that the good for nothing fellow in the village, the cattle thief and all troublemonger, you see, if he applied, the village headman and everybody got together and said, hey, first class opportunity for you, and then made good there, we will select you. They managed to get rid of useless fellows also.
I said that happened. That's very interesting. But I thought they had the land catchers on the spot and all that. Yes, prevent
no.
This sort of
thing. No. To prevent, actually, what they were trying to do was to prevent people with a lot of resources and all getting the land.
Mm-hmm.
People who have up to that time been able to get land through the land sales and all.
Mm-hmm.
Prevent them land to wait towards the peasantry.
Yes.
So when you sort out the people with land, estates, property, income out of the way, you are keeping out the enterprising section.
Yes.
That's what you're saying, is that?
Yes.
Those who have been making good themselves on their own. So that sector is kept out. Because that was the sector that made the best in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So in going to select the peasant, and among the peasants also not the affluent and prosperous peasant, but the fellow who was simply struggling along in life, when you select that set of fellows, then you have been actually selecting some people through improvidence or their own lack of enterprise and various things, a sort of a weak sector from a production point of view.
Yes.
People who are not enterprising enough to make use of the resources that have been put into their hands, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But the line of thinking died in that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these fellows are the people who have been sort of suffering a lot, and they are people who are mostly needy, and they have their hands, they have their family, when they are given an opportunity. And then, of course, the government came in to buttress any difficulties for them by way of assistance. both direct assistance and monetary assistance. Mm-hmm. Direct means government itself doing the development.
That's
right. Took a lot of burden from them. With the result that I think they have begun to, now see, it's a government that must come and do
everything.
Okay. It has come to that also. Now, land development ordinance, so all the land given for land development at that stage was for food. Paddy. Highland, even the highland crop, they were expected to grow a few coconuts and vegetables for their subsistence. But mainly on the food front. That's the change. Subsequently, this land development ordinance, some land being given for coconut plantation, some in the hill country for rubber, some for tea. Those came quite a deal afterwards. So, land development ordinance, one of the requirements is when the peasants get land, they have to reside on the land. The residential thing is an essential thing. So, if you examine those conditions, then you will see that.
How was it that headmen were able to farm off these chandiyas? I thought the AGA was supposed to...
You see, even now, it's such a difficult thing to assess unless you assess on the government reports. There was agreement, sort of a tacit feeling that the trouble mongering in the village should be removed, should be... others also would not protest. They would perhaps like to get this chap out of the way. That's one idea. And I don't think anybody would have protested. Number two, the whole of the headman and the officials were such that the people also don't openly at that stage complain against any injustice in this election. Rather, they would fall in line with the headman, give him a couple of rupees and try to see that the headman sponsors them.
Yes, I was wondering whether, for instance, a chap with a little bit of land, say 1-2 acres in the village, could get around the headman to give land to his son or get land himself, though he had land.
Although, it's very rare, because this petition habit is out there. Indirectly, when a petition comes, But then at the land section, the questions are asked. So there's a form, it is refused and all that. You go on the form, oh, I've got a land here. I am living in somebody else's house. Do you own it? No, I don't own it. And I can't use so-and-so's paddy field.
If they're lying?
If they're lying, they're liable to cancel at any stage, no.
No, but I was wondering whether the other people would speak up.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they do.
Say the headman is a bit of a thug and he could take...
Rather fighting, there's a DRO also, no? He also should be able to... at the time, like a matter.
When the DRO system was instituted, and for instance, when you were a DRO for a little while, did you know enough about the area to check on all the facts which the village headman gave?
Well, you don't know everything, okay, but after some time, it's a feel, you see. If I open at a land factory, at a place where you select people, the thing goes on. But when you go for some other work somewhere else, people don't get talked
about.
Mm. The gossiping goes on.
So you hear things?
If I say, such a place, this happened, that happened, and if you investigate, you can get it. And if you are keen, you can get at the root of things. That's no difficulty, but a good lot of the selections were land of people who have no problem. Because you know that if you are working man in that area, when you go, who are the fellows who are landless and who are the fellows who are the whole time down and out.
Mm-hmm.
You can see. Village life is very close to this life, you see, unlike a city or something like that. Each fellow knows the other fellows. What is happening very closely. So, in the process of selection, cultivators or peasants with such amount of enterprise and who should be there working, along with them came undesirable elements also. And the very first stages, this is not such an attractive thing. You see, with the result of reluctance, rather you have to persuade some people to go. It's only subsequently when malaria and all got eradicated and communications improved, this, that, and these people got a few good views from their pedophiles, that the others got attracted.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the process. You see, now, say, you select a certain number of families from a village. Now those fellows go and settle down.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm? They are being provided with means to go there with the transport, otherwise some other way and settle down. Then they find they can't cultivate. They are new place, no friends. All the government has done is set all development of the land and you got your people and buffalo, and yet till you get rooted and then know the area properly, you want extra hands to help you. Because at a very early stage, you got a fairly large extent, 5 acres of ten land. Not easy to cultivate 5 acres of ten land, you see. You can cultivate within a certain minimum period. Cultivating can't be done the whole year. There are the seasons. The seasons are short. Farming has to be done within a certain number of days. And there are, when you correlate it to the irrigation side, you fix the date. What you choose from such and such a day to such and such a day. Like that, you see. So you have to do your work within that period. And possibly you have enough of hands, or you are not still properly geared. Or some of these fellows who were not doing agriculture, might have been a barber or a carter or something who got evicted from a village. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Or a potter or some chap. Although he didn't get a cultivation, he wasn't even under behind being able to stand up to the strength. So what happened was, their relations from the village
came
to help. When the relations came, I mean, over a fixed number of years, they used to come and help them, go back, come, get something out of that, you see, they go back. Then they found that these lands are more productive than their own village lands. And there was a better opportunity for them to make good in life.
So it's got in the game.
Yes, so gradually, colonization schemes, or schemes under the land development ordinance, which were not very attractive, or not attractive at all to begin with, became attractive like magnets, you see, began to draw in people, not only to help these people, then they began to want land themselves, and when they were not able to get land, they just began to squat here and there. And the squatter, when you look at just an enterprising fellow, squatter gets no assistance from the government, he lives like on a knife edge the whole time, don't know, at what moment he'll be pushed out. And he puts forth his best to see that this land is given up very quickly and a house is constructed so that when the time comes for the illicit clearing report or whatever comes and when the force of the law takes place to oust him, he is able to say, my God, here, I have developed this land, why do I have to push me out of this? Up to that, the man is putting forward his best. You see, once he gets the title to the land, then he will access it. That's what I feel. That uncertainty, during the period of uncertainty, he will do a lot of work. So anyway, now, the land development ordinance, operation of it was such, it was at the very early stages, people were from many parts of the country were not going in there. Although, with the result, the government had to step in more and do some more work to make it more attractive. Began to take more and more burdens onto the government itself, directly. Then with malaria going off, with the government stepping more into, if you read the assistance system of the land commissioner's reports, you say, to begin with, stumping and clearing, they were getting money for that. If they stumped and cleared, they got payment for that, with their own land. Subsequently, the land development ordinance did the stumping and clearing also. Various stages, you see. Now, Mathura area, my own only victory. People, landless people, or those people are hunting land here and there. I always jealous when I go to visit them, so I come down for the time. I come down there. So he went down. And there are some of the meetings that he had with the peasants. He explained to them the land policies. And he said to people like you, to settle you in, is coinage. We are that, if we are in such and such banks and such and such banks and in such and such part of the country, we are agriculture, we are medical cultivation in the old days, now we would want to bring back the same prosperity back. And you better apply, and we will, in our selection, we will also give some places, number of places for you all. So he went away. That's the line that he adopted and put to the people. Now when I followed up subsequently, about a month or two later, they were protesting to me. They were protesting.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they were saying, what is this, sir? Here we have first class water. Look at our water. Look at our land, climate. You want us to give up, give all this up and go to some out of the way place, dry zone, where the climate is different and we'll have to be boiling the whole time. Drinking water, you have to get from a tank, muddy water. Even if you die here by drinking this water, that is something better than going there and all there to drink it. You see? So I said, all right, if you people talk like that, there's no possibility for you to get land. In this country, you can't get land. The water here is good, no doubt, but the water there, people are living now, they are prospering very well, and in the past, how did the people do it? Like that, I had to argue with them, and I said, I have to tell them all the right. You are not, if you are indifferent to this, that's the, Mr. came and laid down the policy, and we can get places for you. If you are indifferent, if you don't want to go, you can't help it. But I know, I tell you, the day you open your eyes, those areas will be available for you. And then I said, you will have to wait like this till the development will come almost up to the Mahagalikanga from that side. Mahagalikanga gets across my left to the other side. Generally, you open a place, it will be too late. So my advice to you is, leave this useless coppers to drink this water and die or something. But whoever wants to go, need to care to go. And then we took one whole, two villages, two small villages on top of a plateau. On top of a plateau, you see, from Ningandahi, we have to go from Ningandahi, you know, we have to go to a place called Uttamadhi, then to look down to Pilsa, then Korahana. That's called Korahana, about 15-20 miles away from the last motoring point. Beyond that, you have to walk, Celtic water. Up to down there, again, up like that. And in that place, we have about 50-20 families. We had a big drought. As a result of the drought, all their chain of crops failed. Here used to subsist on maize and kurakka. There are a few paddy fields in that village, not supplied by any sort of irrigation, because it's on a top of a plateau, you can't irrigate on a plateau, depending on the rain water. So when the rainfall is good, they get a crop. They used to keep the paddy for an occasional use, consumption. Just the occasion, all the visitors come, or they have something or other. Like that, you see. But the subsist was mainly on kurakkan, maize and things like that. That's village. Their regular meal of rice and rice came in as a result of the rationing scheme during the war. As a result of the rationing scheme, their rice was delivered at their co-op regularly, weekly. So they got into the habit of consuming rice. Now those villages don't even grow the kurakka. They have become the rice consumers. Then, what did you do now? You found, so with the drought, they had to begin relief work. So we gave them relief work in constructing that road. What, 10-12 mile road actually? So, not only that village, adjoining village is all employed in that. And we are trying to take the road up to that village. You can't take a notable road, but you know, it's like... Goods are transported on what they call Thavalam.
Yes, I know.
So the Thavalam mules used to carry the goods closely. Even now I think it's up to fine. So I found my God pouring next into this damn place, constructing roads, airport only. Our next shower of mine is washing that also, and the roadside in the same place. And we can't do the irrigation, we can't do a thing. But it's with air condition. Our plateau. So I persuaded the whole lot to go to the colony. So we lifted the entire village, including the village members. And that village and another village, some 50 or 75 families like that, and in a special train we saw to it that the village went to Polonnaruwa. Now they were settled in Polonnaruwa, the entire village, mind you. And they were there for some time. The headman came back, and two, three other fellows who could speak there, they came back, and again they started this, their old game, they're back in their old place, you see. I think that's also now coming up to this village, but anyway, the whole lot was taken there. About a few years after that, then that was a time when I was a member for what you call Mathurata. Mathurata included Hangurantika, present Hangurantika too, yes. And present Valapanasi put together. What Mathurata those days? So I am a member for both, but one seat at that time. Subsequently, I was still a member for Mathurata. I was sitting at Srava. For giving blood, his blood bank, they had organized in Polonnaruwa some samadana, the rural development movement, for us to come here and give blood. And I think the organizers, and I saw the priest was also staying with us at the time, and a couple of ministers, the home minister was doing that, and Heratnayaka was the home minister. They were giving nice to these fellows at Shravasti who came from Polonnaruwa to donate blood. And I was asked to wait for lunch. I had no hand in this organization. I was living there, so I also participated at the lunch. So I was waiting for this. Sonis came after blood donation, you see, and they turned up. A couple of buses or something like that. And I was just talking to them about Polonnaruwa cultivation, this and other one thing. And two, three youngsters came to me and said, sir, can't you recognize us? So I said, it's difficult to recognize. But if you tell me your whereabouts and how, who are, is it from where you are, from where you get to Polonnaruwa and all that, possibly I might be able to locate its identity. Then he said, sir, why, we are the people who came from that village. Mind you, it hasn't taken so long, but these are young chaps, 12-year boys, 13-year boys who came. Now they are 17, 18. But all that happened, it was here and all that, you see. So, why did you go up to those youngsters? They have come to give blood. Then I started talking to them. I asked them how they are doing, oh, okay, quite all right, this, that and all right, and your father, mother, how they are taken up to the floor, they are calculating. All those things I went through. Then I asked questions. Now, do you go to your old village? How often do you go there? So, you don't go very often. I said, surely, your relations are all, some of them are there, no? And then I asked the cultivation of our possibility, yes, you go there, and I am there. But that climate doesn't agree with us. Now, remember, yes, I mean, these are the very fellows who are telling me, how can you go to the dry zone? Our climate is the best for us, and what is the best? The children were telling me, they didn't know that conversation, no? They are telling me that they don't want to go back to their village because that climate doesn't suit them. The old climate. Things had changed, that section, even when they are thinking. Now, along with them then, now what is that? Now, the point I am trying to drive is this. They are after. I had no peace of applicants wanting to go to the colonization. So from my elected, the past elected, there are fellows in Polonnaruwa, there are fellows in Hingurangole, there are fellows in Lampare, there are fellows, they were all over the landscape. Minike, it was a case of the trying to satisfy their urge in getting land in the land development in the colonies. So a colony, colonization as it started was very unattractive. At a certain stage, people had doubts. Then because of the relations going, this man going, that man, they found hospital. Hello? Agreed? Right. So, then it became an attractive place. And now we can't keep up with the demand.
But with regard to this
cross purposes, you know, social justice and production. What are you doing about it now? Is it? Sometimes you get unenterprising fellows because you...
Now, that's the question that you should really put to whom?
The Minister of Land.
Yeah. But I will ask the question, but you must put it to him at some stage, you see. We find this development. Development mainly, people who have gone there, got land under the colony, old colony, have developed the land, are now in a condition, they feel now this will restrict you. They will restrict you.
Mm-hmm.
They have made good. The income they get is good.
Mm-hmm.
The paddy, they are with 2 seasons cultivation, where some people have only one assured supply of water. Then, in many ways, their incomes have improved. So they want to, children also are growing. Families are